Hello, Internet, and welcome to another episode of the Wrestling Reporter Podcast, your new destination for professional wrestling. My name is Damian Michaels, and I'll be your host for the evening. On this week's episode, we'll be discussing the happenings of NXT Roadblock, my thoughts on AEW Revolution, and a couple other random news stories I thought would be interesting to talk about. Before we get started today, though, make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so you never miss another episode like this one. Now, we've got a lot to talk about today, so let's not waste any more time and get into the show. So last week, we started with some sad news when we learned that both Virgil and Ollie Anderson died, and we do the same this week as we've learned that Paul the Butcher Vachon has passed away as well. Paul was born on October 7th, 1937 in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. He began wrestling in 1957 when he joined his brother, Mad Dog Vachon, in the business. He won many titles during his near 30-year career, including the AWA World Tag Team Championships with his aforementioned brother. He retired from wrestling in 1985 before joining the world of politics as a member of the New Democratic Party in Canada. He also self-published his own autobiography called When Wrestling Was Real that was sold in the early 2000s. He passed away on February 29th, 2024 at the age of 86 years old. In some more lighthearted news, Jack Perry has made his official NJPW debut in a match against Shota Umino in a winning effort with the help of the House of Torture as part of the New Japan Cup. After the match, the House of Torture offered Jack Perry a t-shirt, and he accepted, seeming to have joined the faction. I mentioned last week that I don't have the opportunity to watch New Japan, but I did want to cover it, and that this was something that I saw that I thought was interesting enough for me to go over. I'm familiar enough with Jack Perry from what I saw of him and his work in AEW, and while I can't say for sure how well I think he will do, seeing as I don't know who the House of Torture are, I like that Perry made the call to go to Japan, especially after what happened with him and Punk in August. And his suspension from AEW. I like seeing people find work, and I just love wrestling as a whole, so I do hope that he does well here, and that this is something that takes him far. I do also like the opportunity that this provides people outside of the New Japan circle. So myself, I'm not familiar with New Japan, I don't know who the House of Torture are, so I do like that this provides a jumping point into this faction for a lot of Western fans who may not know who they are to begin with. I have heard a lot that the House of Torture aren't very popular outside of the Japanese circle of things, and I think that that's just a matter of Western fans in specifically liking what's given to them here in the West with the AEW deathmatch product and then the over-the-top style of the WWE product. I think that that's just a byproduct of what we as Western fans are usually provided, but I am excited to see where Jack Perry goes in the House of Torture here. I do like seeing this here, and I hope to see more of the House of Torture in the future. I want to do some more research into them so I can talk about them a little bit more. But I like seeing this because now I know who the House of Torture are when I didn't before, and that's all because of Jack Perry. Which really I'm familiar with Jack Perry because of CM Punk. So this is all because of CM Punk. So really, if you want to go down that long list of rabbit holes there. But yeah, I'm really excited to see Jack Perry in New Japan. I'm excited to see what he can do over there. And even if he doesn't come back to AEW following his suspension and him ripping his contract on New Japan TV, I'm really excited to see this. I hope that he does well there, and I like just seeing wrestling in general, so this is good in my opinion. I like seeing this. Moving on from the world of New Japan, but keeping on theme just a little bit, I'd like to talk about AEW Revolution a little bit from this past Sunday. Now, while I wasn't able to watch the show in its entirety, I did get to watch some of the clips from the show, just because, you know, social media and everything exists. I got to see that awesome glass spot from Darby Allin. That was pretty awesome getting to see that. I saw how his back looked after that. I did read online that they had an alternative finish planned for the match, just in case Darby wasn't wasn't able to return after the glass spot. So I do appreciate that AEW had safety precautions in place for everything with that, and that was good. I do appreciate that Sting's match went off mostly without a hitch. As I said, I couldn't watch it, so I don't want to say that it went 100% perfect. I don't know if there was anything wrong. But I did get to see this spot after the match with Sting's sons. I thought that was pretty cool. I saw the post online that his sons made about how one of them has a YouTube channel mostly dedicated to Destiny, but he stopped uploading recently because of this match. And so I do like that Sting and his sons really took the time to dedicate themselves to this retirement match. And I like how much that Darby put himself through from what I was able to see of the match. Everything was fantastic from what I did see, and I'm glad that Sting got to have a good retirement. And then they also acknowledged Sting's retirement on Raw. I think that was a pretty good send-off. It's not often that you get to see retiring legends get mentioned in other companies, and I think that's nice that happened for this time with the WWE, with the Fed. Elsewhere on the Revolution card, we also got to see Christian Cage retain his TNT Championship against Daniel Garcia, as well as Eddie Kingston defeat Bryan Danielson to retain the Continental Crown Championship. Timeless Toni Storm continued her reign as AEW Women's World Champion, and this was a surprise twist for me, but Roderick Strong became the new AEW International Champion after defeating Orange Cassidy that night. Now, this wasn't really a twist for me because I didn't expect Roderick Strong to win the belt or anything. It was just I've seen Orange Cassidy with the belt for so long that I don't even know if he's been without the belt since he won it from PAC so long ago. But yeah, I think that was a good match, and from what I have seen so far, and this is one that I actually want to actively seek out and watch with my fiance, because she loves Orange Cassidy, so even though he loses this match, I think that she would appreciate getting to watch him on that. So this is one that I am going to seek out, and we're going to sit down, we're going to watch that. Just a side note on that as well, while I was writing out my script for everything for this, just my talking points to go over, she saw where I was looking at the Revolution match card to make sure that I had everything ran down correctly, and she got really excited when she saw Orange Cassidy versus Roderick Strong. So just a little side note on there that she's definitely excited for the match, even though she doesn't know anything about it. And overall, even though I can't watch the AEW product, I do appreciate that it exists, and I hope that it flourishes throughout the years to come. I hope that one day I get to watch AEW much more as a product, but for the time being, for what I am able to watch, I appreciate it as a product. It helps build competition for WWE, so their product is better as a whole, and just as a wrestling fan, I love having more wrestling existing. More people have jobs in the business and the industry, and I do want to cover more AEW in the future, but it'll more than likely just be pay-per-views. I'm not able to keep up with the weekly TV, but I did want to cover Revolution while I had the opportunity to. And for our final topic for the day, the remainder of today's episode will be spent talking about NXT Roadblock. So, since last week, I decided that covering Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and anything else that I wanted to discuss just isn't possible in the 30 minutes that I have to do these episodes. So I think I'm just going to be sticking to NXT for the time being as the show that I cover for a whole bunch of reasons. Mostly, a whole bunch of other people already cover Raw and SmackDown pretty well, so I don't see a reason for me to need to rehash that as well. And it gives me a reason to watch more wrestling every week, because I do enjoy NXT so far, what I've seen of it up to this point. So it gives me an excuse to be able to watch more of what I enjoy, and I feel like I can provide a unique perspective that most other content creators can't at the moment, because I'm a new viewer, so I get to see this through a fresh pair of eyes that most people can't. But with all of that admin out of the way, we can go ahead and get started talking about the show. And the night started off pretty well with Lexus King introducing us to the show and running down the card for the night. We got to see a little video package for Mello versus Tony, Gacy versus Dijak, and the NXT Women's Champion Lyra Valkyria and Tatum Paxley versus the Kabuki Warriors. Now this opening package is pretty cool in my opinion. I liked getting to see Lexus King. I haven't seen too much of him because he wasn't on last week's show, but I have seen some of him online, and he's pretty cool from what what I have seen, and I like his look. I like his attire. He's pretty good, in my opinion. I like seeing Lexus King so far. But after that video package ended, we opened up on Booker T and Vic Joseph getting ready to start the Asylum match between Jijak and Gacy. Now, this match was held in a steel cage with weapons hanging around the ring, including a trash can, steel chair, and straitjacket, as well as many other weapons. I love watching Gacy's entrance into the arena. The camera work with the upside-down camera was pretty cool, in my opinion. I like Dijak's as well with the black and white. I like the black and white that they're doing with both Dijak and the Final Testament on SmackDown. I like that aesthetic. It's pretty cool whenever you get to do it right. But the rules to the Asylum match are pretty simple, so both competitors are locked in the cage, and the only way to win is by pinfall or submission. You can't win by escaping the cage. The match started out interesting with Dijak getting an early lead, and he got pretty curious with a box that said, "Do not open." Now, this box was hilarious, and we'll get back to that in a moment. But Gacy prevented him from opening it with a little roll-up, and he tried to gain a bit more control, but Dijak stopped him and went for that box again. This box was funny, bro. This box, when he finally got it opened, it just punched him in the face with a little rubber mallet, and this reminded me of the Sami Zayn match from a couple years ago at WrestleMania, when he had that match with... he didn't have that match with Johnny Knoxville from Jackass. That was pretty cool. I thought that it just made me think of that match, and honestly, I'm gonna go watch that match back at some point because that was pretty cool. But this only he got punched in the face with a box, and just the ridiculousness of this was hilarious to me. But Gacy went for a cover, and it only got him a two count, and then we went to commercial. When we returned, Dijak was scaling the cage, but of course you're not able to win the match by escaping the cage. So once he got up there, he just went for a giant moonsault off the top of the cage. This was awesome, but this only led to a two count as well. I didn't think this was going to end the match, especially being so early, but this was a massive move, and it would not have surprised me if it ended the match there. Of course, Gacy struggled to get up and gain the upper hand, but Dijak goes to get a straitjacket that was in a trash can earlier, and he begins circling Gacy. He begins trying to put that straitjacket on him, and Gacy fights back against it because he clearly doesn't want to wear it. I wouldn't want to wear one either. Gacy gets a second to breathe as he fights back, but Dijak goes to grab a table from the corner. He's thwarted as Gacy interrupts him and grabs his own table with a smiley face on it. This was pretty cool. I don't know what the smiley face was for, but I liked it. Dijak gets a chair and begins to hit Gacy with it, taking the chance to try and tie the jacket back onto him. Gacy kicks Dijak, and he tries to gain a little bit more control, a little bit more momentum, but he just isn't able to gain that necessary footing. Dijak gets Gacy up on the top rope, and they go for a massive suplex on the table, but Gacy counters with a headbutt, and Dijak falls through the table himself. Gacy goes for a jump while tied in that jacket, and he actually hits it, where he manages to untie some of the jacket afterwards and gain some control. But as he stands up to try to capitalize, Dijak gets in with a massive clothesline. This pretty much makes Gacy flip inside out. It was pretty cool watching it. Both are down, and Dijak troubles to grab some duct tape out of the corner. He uses the tie up Joe Gacy's face and eyes before grabbing a kendo stick out of the corner. Or from the top of the cage, my bad. And he begins to beat Gacy with it. He counters by kicking Dijak in the balls and leads to a Uranagi, but this only gets a two count. Gacy grabs the kendo stick himself and tries to gain control, but Dijak pushes Gacy into the corner table set up earlier. Dijak goes for a pin, but again, only a two count, and they try to run the rope before Dijak hits him with another Feast Your Eyes. Dijak pits Gacy up and goes for a Feast Your Eyes. Gacy defiantly stands back up and runs the ropes before Dijak hits him with another one and gets the three count. Overall, this match was pretty good. NXT impressed me, Dijak impressed me, Joe Gacy impressed me, just everything as a whole out of this match was awesome. I don't really know what I expected going into it, but this blew me away. I wasn't familiar with who either of these guys were. I didn't know what the Asylum match was going to be, but this could not have gone any better than what I could have expected out of that. But after the match, we cut backstage to see Tony D'Angelo talking to his cronies, Luca Crucifino from last week. He walks into the room, and he seems to have effectively joined the Mafia as Tony offers him a spot in the family, and Luca accepts. Afterwards, we move on to the next match of the night, which was Bron Breakker and Baron Corbin defending the NXT Tag Team Championships against Chase U. During their entrances, we cut to the back to see Tatum and Lyra talking about their tag match later against the Kabuki Warriors, and I'm going to be honest, Tatum is seriously off-putting for me, and I hope this story is going somewhere because I don't like Tatum at all. That's just my opinion. I'm sure that that is the point of her character, but I don't like it. I hope that this is going somewhere because I want to enjoy it. Even with a little bit of story beats later on in their actual match, it's not enough for me to be invested in Tatum's character, and I hope that this goes somewhere better soon. Moving on from that, we did go back to the ring where we saw Chase U entering the arena as well, and I'm not sure how I feel about these guys. I'm just getting a bunch of Spirit Squad vibes from them personally, but I'm hoping that I'm wrong. I hope that they do well in the future. They did perform a little bit well in this match, but I didn't get to see too much from them because Baron Corbin and Bron Breakker had the control through most of the match. It started off with Baron Corbin and Andre Chase in the ring. And Andre pretty much slapped Corbin and tried to go for a roll-up pretty much immediately. But Corbin wasn't having it. He almost stayed in control throughout quite a bit of this. Bron Breakker tags in, and he kind of just laughs off anything that Andre does. He lifts Andre into the air and just starts going for all kinds of everything. Bron Breakker stays in control through most of this. Hudson tries to get involved to equalize things a little bit, but it's just not working. We cut to commercial, and when we come back, Chase U is... looks like Chase U is in control whenever we come back from commercial, but that doesn't stay for long because Corbin and... Breakker stay back on top through a lot of this. This was a good match in my opinion. Just my notes are all over the place on this one. Either way, it was good. The ending sequence to this was especially interesting in my opinion. I did like seeing the deep six into the spear from Corbin and Breakker onto Andre Chase. This match was good in my opinion. Lots of everything going around all of the time. It was very good, very fast paced. I'm excited to see more from these guys in the future, and I'm excited to see Bron Breakker on SmackDown as well. He had that squash match against Zion Quinn last week, I think, and that match was what, a total of 4 or 5 seconds, so definitely interesting. I do like seeing Bron Breakker doing well, and I hope to see him do well in the future as well. I hope to see Baron Corbin back on SmackDown or Raw someday. But for the time being, he's doing pretty well in NXT, and I hope to see him continue this career resurgence that he's been on. But after that, we cut to the back to see Carmelo Hayes being interviewed, and he had a new security detail with him, because remember last week we had Tony D'Angelo, who just kind of waved his hand and Melo's security disappeared without you know, talking to him or anything, but he just kind of left. His security for this week, they kind of look like the Taliban, and he says that he handpicked his own security to make sure that they protect him. And he's talking about how he deserves the title match for Stand and Deliver, and that he's going to do what it takes to get that match. Next, we cut to Ilya Dragunov being asked about what he thinks of Tony and Melo in their match tonight. Ilya gets interrupted by Stax and Luka, telling him that Tony will be coming for him and that title. Overall, I think that these are nice segments leading into the tag title match between Asuka and Kairi and Tatum and Lyra, because this match was all over the place too. This was just a whole jumble of pretty much everything. Now, I've already said how I feel about Tatum. I think that she's very off-putting, in my opinion, and I'm hoping that that story is going somewhere. But this match was very good. Of course, I expected it to be because it's Asuka and Kairi Sane. They are very good at what they do. But the match started with Asuka and Tatum in the ring. And, no, I think it was Asuka and Lyra, my bad. But either way, Asuka and Lyra started off the match, and everything is very smooth, very quick between these two. They get a very easy, quick A headlock and Oscar prevented it with some clean grappling. Lyra moves very smooth and quickly throughout the ring before Oscar is able to tag in Kairi. Tatum gets the tag as well, and they do this very weird crawl around the ring, and they just start running into each other. Kairi gets up top and goes for a jump, and Kairi starts taunting Tatum. This is all a very weird sequence, and it's a little bit off-putting. But Kairi ends it in control by throwing Paxley out of the ring, and Kairi handles Lyra on the apron when Asuka kicks Paxley in the head on the outside. Kairi tags in Asuka, and she stays in control in the center of the ring, taunting Lyra. Asuka tags Kairi back in, but we cut backstage to see a brawl going on between Chase U. I'm not sure what this was all about, but I do know that during the Chase U match, one of the women on the outside ended up storming off backstage, so I'm assuming that this has something to do with that. But when we return to full screen, we see Lyra and Tatum are in control of Kairi. Asuka tries to interject, but she gets stopped in her tracks as Tatum and Lyra throw her back outside, and they hit a dive attack. We head to commercial, and when we return, Asuka and Paxley. Asuka has Paxley in an ankle lock in the center of the ring. Paxley tries crawling to Lyra for a tag, but Asuka drags her back, preventing that. Paxley counters, throwing Asuka into her corner, and this is how she tags into Kairi, and she interrupts Paxley from tagging out herself. She locks into an ankle lock of her own, while Paxley continues to try and rally, but she just can't get the upper hand from any of this. She does manage to escape eventually and get the hot tag, and Lyra tries to gain control, knocking down both Asuka and Kairi, and she hits a DDT on Asuka. But this doesn't last for long. Lyra does go for a Northern Light suplex and get a two count on the bridge. But after this, Lyra throws Kairi into the ropes, but Asuka tags in. So then Asuka gains control again here. And from here, Asuka and Kairi just keep control through the rest of this. At one point, Lyra does accidentally kick Tatum in the face, and this is how we get to the end of the match. But the Kabuki Warriors end up picking up the win, retaining their titles, and I figured that they would because we're heading into the other storyline later. But this was a very good match overall as well, in my opinion. I thought it was very good. I hope to see more out of Tatum and Lyra in the future. I hope that Tatum's story and character becomes a little bit better because I'm a bit put off by it. But otherwise, everything was good on this. After the match, Kairi and Asuka left the arena when Roxanne Perez attacked Lyra in the middle of the ring. She went to the corner, exposed the ring corner, and ended up trying to snap Lyra's arm. Now, this is a title match that I'm expecting probably for Stand and Deliver, if I was to guess. I don't know who Roxanne Perez is. I think I remember her from when Becky Lynch was NXT champion. But otherwise, I'm not entirely sure where this is going, but I am excited to see what we're doing with this. Moving on, we do get to the final match of the night. Now, this was probably the shortest match on the entire card, but I think that's just because a lot of people already knew what was going to happen on this. I didn't, because I didn't know the show. But after seeing everything, I did kind of, in hindsight, I could have seen everything coming. But next we move on to the main event, where Tony D'Angelo and Carmelo Hayes are fighting for the number one contendership for the NXT title. This was definitely the match that I was most excited for, personally, because after last week with Tony D'Angelo standing on business and just waving away Hayes security detail, I have been hooked on Tony D'Angelo and the family. I thought it was pretty cool. I told my fiance about them, and she was just like, oh, I can't believe the Mafia runs NXT, and I was like, yeah, I can't either. It's fucking awesome. I'll have to edit that. I'm sorry. But anyway. We do start off with Tony being in control through most of this match. He just towers over Carmelo. And for the next like 8 or 9 minutes or what, however long this match was, Tony just completely destroys Melo. He does get a little bit of the upper hand every now and again. But for the most part, it is just Tony, Tony, Tony. Melo does kick out of quite a few big moves. There's a lot of wrist locks, a lot of holds here, but Tony does get quite a few spine busters. Melo tries to go for a few super kicks throughout the match. But all in all, this was a good match. Towards the end, we did get a little interruption from Trick Williams' music hitting, and this had what's his face, Mello, a little bit worried about him coming out of the ramp. So he had his security detail watching everything, and while he was paying attention to the entrance ramp looking for Trick, that is when Tony got the distraction. He hit him with a spine buster into a forget about it. Now, I thought that that was pretty cool. I did like seeing Tony pick up the win, and I'm expecting to see Trick versus Mello at Stand and Deliver, and now we're definitely getting Tony versus Ilja Dragunov for the NXT title at Stand and Deliver. So I do like seeing how the Stand and Deliver card is playing out so far. It's interesting getting to see that. And I hope to see more out of all of this here later. The show closed with Trick Williams attacking Carmelo Hayes and running him and his security detail off backstage. Now, his security was pretty much useless. They didn't do anything throughout this entire night. But I thought that this was pretty cool. I do like the story that we're seeing here between these four individuals. And I like what's going on here, and I'm excited to see more, and I hope that NXT continues to thrive from what I've seen so far. And at this point, that is all the time that we have for today, my friends, but we've covered a lot in such a short amount of time. We discussed NXT Roadblock, and it was very exciting. AEW Revolution set a new standard for a different bar of wrestling, and New Japan has gained a new Jungle Boy. And I'm excited for what's to come over the next few weeks. I'm ready for WrestleMania weekend, and I cannot wait to see how NXT Stand and Deliver plays out after the show that we saw this week with Roadblock. Now, I had a great time getting to talk with you today, and I hope to see you join me again next week for even more wrestling. Now, on that note, my name is Damien, and you've been wonderful this evening. Be kind to yourself, and y'all have a great night.